Hello and welcome to Minnesota's Swine and You podcast series, a University of Minnesota Extension swine program. Today's podcast is a research update on the longitudinal evaluation of Mycoplasma pneumoniae detected in processing fluids in swine breed to wean farms. My name is Sarah Sheik Belke, your host, and I'm a swine extension educator with the University of Minnesota. Joining me today is Albert Kenturi, who is a pathologist and assistant professor in the Department of Veterinary Population Medicine and the Veterinary Diagnostic Laboratory. To get us started today, Albert, will you share a little bit about yourself, including who did you work with to complete this project?
Sure. Well, hello. Thank you for having me. My name is Albert Kenturi. I'm a veterinary pathologist by formation. And the research that I will be talking to you about today was included in my PhD thesis that was done here at the Minnesota, at the University of Minnesota in the Mycoplasma Research Lab. And it was under the supervision of Dr. Maria Peters. And since last year, I have been working as a foot animal diagnostician and pathologist here at the Diagnostic Lab.
Great. Thank you for sharing that. And what research topic will you be sharing with us today? I guess you kind of alluded to it in your introduction as to working with the Mycoplasma Research Lab, but can you explain a little bit more?
Yeah, so this is today I would like to talk to you about the first study of my PhD thesis, and it was about the detection of Mycoplasma pneumoniae, which is a bacterial pathogen of the respiratory tract of pigs in processing fluids. I would like to share the lessons that we learned from that study, and especially the implications that this has for diagnosis of Mycoplasma pneumoniae in this case, but also for other infectious agents in swine and in other species in terms of sampling strategies, for example, or environmental contamination of samples or PCR testing, and among other topics. So yeah, we'll talk about these things today.
Great. I'm anxious to learn more. So Albert, before we get too far in our discussion here, we should probably give some recognition to the funding source for this research project, because as you and I know, but maybe our listeners are not that familiar with, that research that happens at the University of Minnesota, as well as other institutions, needs a funding source. So can you please share the funding sources for this project that we're talking about today?
Sure. And again, as you said, this is very important for us. So it's always good, and we need to acknowledge those funding agencies. In this case, it was the Minnesota Pork Board and the Minnesota Agricultural Experiment Station through a Rapid Response Fund grant. So thank you both of them for that funding and that opportunity to do this research.
So now let's talk a little bit more about your research and get into kind of the specifics. Can you give a brief introduction to this research study, explaining why was it a valuable project to do?
Yeah, so the reasoning behind this project, I think it started around 2018, and it was based on a very interesting and highly unexpected finding that, again, could not be explained with the knowledge about the bacterium, about Mycoplasma pneumoniae that we had at that moment and that we currently have. So remember that, as I said, Mycoplasma pneumoniae is a bacterium that affects pigs and causes respiratory disease. And very importantly, it is considered to be restricted to the respiratory tract. So the knowledge of this pathogen is that it doesn't travel outside the respiratory tract. That from one side, right? The other side is processing fluids, all right? So processing fluids are a relatively new sample type that consists of the fluid collected from tail docking and castration of pigs, which is a process called processing, so processing pigs. This occurs when piglets are 1 to 3 days old. And with that fluid, we have seen that this fluid, that is the transudate of those testicles and the tails, can be used to detect pathogens, for example, PRRS, PCB2 and 3, etc., mainly viral pathogens. So it's a good sample type to monitor the status of the sow farm for some of the pathogens, right? But again, this was, you know, first PCB2 viral pathogens. And then the surprise came when a swine practitioner from here from Minnesota found or we detected Mycoplasma pneumoniae in processing fluid. So this was very unprecedented, very surprising. And it raised the interest of here, the researchers at the University of Minnesota to look forward to investigate more this finding. So later we did some preliminary studies that were led by Carles Vilalta and Maria Peters. And in those two studies, Mycoplasma was indeed detected by PCR in those processing fluids in different sow parities and different time of the year. So, you know, that was not anecdotal. So that was real. There was Mycoplasma detection in processing fluids. And in another study, and that was very interesting, in those preliminary studies, the detection was observed at the same time than a Mycoplasma outbreak in a previously negative farm. Okay, so those two studies or those two observations raised an important question. And it was, you know, are the processing fluids a valuable sample to detect the infection of Mycoplasma pneumoniae in sow farms? You know, what is the true value of those observations for disease diagnosis? What are we detecting, right? We had a lot of questions. How does Mycoplasma get into the processing fluids? You know, if it appears that it does not travel outside the respiratory tract. So lots of questions that we needed to design a study to answer some of them, or at least to understand better what was happening. So the objective of the present study that I will talk about today was to expand the information that could be considered, you know, very particular or very anecdotal, that was based on few observations and some very particular conditions, by involving more farms from different production systems and to collect samples for a long period of time.
Interesting. So you had mentioned that it was kind of by pure chance originally that Mycoplasma was picked up by the processing fluids. Was that right?
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't know if it was chance or there was something behind that. But yeah, that was maybe it can be called chance, but yeah, that was unexpected for sure.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So how can you the others go about completing this study?
Yeah, so this study, this was a big study. So because again, for this study, we wanted to expand the umbrella of observations. You know, I talked about those two preliminary studies, and we wanted to have much more information, to include more farms, more animals, and to follow all those farms and animals, not for, you know, a short period of time, 1-2 months. In this case, we wanted to follow that for an entire year, you know, to have together the most much information as possible. So in order to do that, we enrolled 10 sow farms from 3 different production systems. 5 were positive to Mycoplasma pneumoniae, and 10 of those farms were negative to Mycoplasma pneumoniae. And from each of these farms, we collected monthly, so each month, we collected 30 individual liter processing fluid samples. So within each liter, the processing fluids of that liter were collected in a bag. And of those 30 individual liter processing fluid samples, 10 were from gilt liters, 10 were from parity 2 gills or sow, sorry, and 10 were from parity 3 and older liters. And we did that monthly for an entire year. And we did this stratified sampling because we wanted to determine, or, you know, we were curious about determining if there was an association between the detection of the Mycoplasma pneumoniae by PCRs and the parity of the sow, right? Because this was something that we saw in those preliminary studies that I mentioned earlier. We wanted to expand that information. And also the fact of collecting samples monthly for an entire year was because we wanted to get numerous observations, but also because we wanted to assess if there was an association between the detection of Mycoplasma and the season of the year. So at the end, when we finish the sampling step or the sampling of this study, we obtain about, you know, lots of samples. We obtain about 3,000 individual liter processing fluids. Again, lots of samples. And we pull them in pools of five for PCR testing. So basically, we tested near 600 samples in this study. And I want to reinforce an important idea here. So again, testing was based on PCR. So detection of genetic material of Mycoplasma gynaemoniae. So Mycoplasma gynaemoniae DNA. This is the most common test for the detection of this bug, of this bacterium, because for this bacterium, bacterial culture, which is a test or an assay that, you know, is very common for other bacterial species, does not work very well for Mycoplasma gynaemoniae. So remember, this is just PCR, detection of DNA, and we don't have information about the viability of Mycoplasma. There is no way to know if what we are detecting in those processing fluids is live or dead Mycoplasma. So keep that in mind for later.
So a couple of questions I thought of as you were going through this. As you mentioned, you know, the herds had either they were, you know, positive, right, for Mycoplasma mm-hmm. or not. Can you just explain just briefly, Mycoplasma is something that commonly circulates in swine herds, correct? Mm-hmm. That's, I shouldn't say like an underline that's kind of always there, but right, mm-hmm. it's fairly prevalent.
Yeah, well, I'm happy to say that I think we are changing that. That was, you know, maybe 20 years ago or even 10 years ago, maybe the majority of the farms worldwide or, you know, here in the upper Midwest were positive to Mycoplasma gynaemoniae, the sow herd. But there has been, you know, for the last decade, and led by Dr. Maria Peters here at the University of Minnesota, an effort and, you know, combined with practitioners and veterinarians and production systems here in Minnesota, especially to eliminate Mycoplasma gynaemoniae from the farms through elimination strategies or eradication programs. And these have been very, some of them, the majority of them have been very successful. So I would say, you know, one of the problems that we had designing this study was to obtain positive Mycoplasma gynaemoniae sow herds in Minnesota because, we are doing a great job eliminating this important disease from the source, from the sow farm. So, yeah, I think we are changing that trend, and that's very important.
Good. Thank you for further explaining that and also pointing out that, yeah, with Dr. Maria Peters' lab, that's her focus in, mm-hmm. in trying to help not only the swine industry here in Minnesota, but also in other states as well to try mm-hmm. and eliminate that. So thank you for explaining mm-hmm. that. So what were the results of this research project?
So the results were, again, another surprise, at least for me at first, right? So the results of the PCR testing showed that the Mycoplasma gynaemoniae was abundantly detected in positive farms. You know, the positivity rate in those positive, the five positive, remember we had five positive farms and five negative farms. In the ones that were positive, the positivity rate was higher than 90%. That was very consistent throughout time, with all months of the year having similar detection rates. And also the quantity of the Mycoplasma gynaemoniae, so very low CT value. So it seems evident from these results that the detection of Mycoplasma genetic material by PCR in processing fluids might be a common finding rather than a sporadic event, as we thought previously. As the detection, again, as I said, it was consistent across various farms of different production systems, regardless of the sow parity. And on the contrary, in those negative farms, Mycoplasma was generally not detected, so very, very low detection rates. So when we obtained these results, we saw that Mycoplasma was so much present in processing fluids of those positive farms. And again, the CT values were very low in some samples. So remember that the lower the CT value in a PCR assay, the higher the more quantity of the target, in this case, Mycoplasma pneumoniae, is in that sample. So lots of Mycoplasma in terms of samples and in terms of quantity. So we wanted to look more into it, and we ran an analysis that was not an objective at the beginning of the study, but that it had it made sense at that moment to perform and to better understand what those positive results were meaning. And in order to do that, we did a selection of the positive sample representing various farms from various systems, and we did DNA sequencing of them. We obtained 7 sequences from those samples from, again, different farms. And interestingly, they were identical between them. So the Mycoplasma obtained there was identical between farms, and it was highly homologous, almost 100% homologous to the J strain of Mycoplasma pneumoniae. And this is a strain that has been historically used for vaccine production. So very important information there with lots of takeaways and implications that, you know, we will talk about later maybe.
So I do have a follow-up question. And hopefully I'm not stealing away from something that you're going to explain later, but with you saying that it's historically used for vaccine production, could it be that that herd was vaccinated for Mycoplasma pneumoniae and that's how it got picked up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will, you know, this is one of the conclusions, or this is one of the hypotheses that we have at this point. So yeah, this is one of the conclusions that I would like to talk about this project. And this, those positive farms were most likely vaccinating for Mycoplasma pneumoniae. And the hypothesis, and we with this study, we don't have enough evidence in order to say that this is 100% the origin of what we detected. But the hypothesis at this point is yes, that what we were detecting was vaccine products. So environmental contamination of those processing fluids by vaccine products. So the if that were to be true, that again, with the evidence that we have here, we can be, you know, very suspicious that this is the case, but we don't have enough evidence to just clearly say that, is that the farm workers, this is our hypothesis, again, trying to give a mechanistic explanation to that, right? So our hypothesis is that when the workers perform processing in a given day, maybe they have been previously vaccinating pigs at weaning, right? Piglets that get vaccinated with Mycoplasma pneumoniae at weaning. So they can be, rest or remnants of those that vaccine can get into your hands or your clothes or, you know, coveralls, etc. And this can, you know, environmentally be a source of environmental contamination for those processing fluids that are later collected. And that might be the source of the detection of processing of Mycoplasma in processing fluids. This is one of our hypotheses. And this has great implications for sampling, for PCR testing that I would be, you know, we can talk about later.
So you might have alluded to some of them already, but based off of your results, what conclusions can you make from this research project?
Yeah, so lots of conclusions. Again, this was the first study of my PhD, and some of the things that we learned paved the way for further research and for expanding and for later research opportunities that made up my whole PhD research, right? So first, we saw that Mycoplasma pneumoniae was frequently detected by PCR in positive farms, both in terms of quantity of genetic material and consistency of detection throughout time, while it was not generally not detected in negative farms. So I guess from now on, it shouldn't surprise us that DNA from the bacterium is detected in processing fluids from those positive farms, right? So at the beginning, I thought it was very surprising to everybody. Now, it wouldn't surprise us, right, for everything that we have explained. However, and again, this relates to what I was talking to you about earlier, the mechanisms by which the genetic material of Mycoplasma reach those processing fluids is still unclear. Even though, as I said, the mycoplasma is considered to be restricted to the respiratory tract. And there are a few studies based on experimental conditions or even in vitro studies that have suggested that mycoplasma can disseminate outside the lungs, or, you know, for very, at least transiently, or for very short periods of time. So at this point, we are not completely sure about the origin of the detected DNA in the prostate fluids. But, you know, however, as I said, this consistency of detection and the high bacterial loads that we obtain made us consider performing DNA sequencing, just, you know, again, to try to characterize the nature and the possible origin of the genetic material. And as you said, we obtained a high homology with a strain that is used in commercial vaccine products. So again, our hypothesis is that the origin of the detected genetic material may be associated to environmental contamination of the prostate fluids with Mycoplasma high pneumonia vaccine products, rather than true presence of the bacterium in the testicles or in the associated fluid. But again, this is just an hypothesis, and I think more research is needed in order to know better or to be 100% sure about the origin of the detection of mycoplasma in prostate fluids.
So why are the results you shared important takeaways from your study?
So I think this, again, this study, there are many ramifications, you know, many branches from the results of this study. And I would like to focus perhaps on the two most important ones, in my opinion. So first, this study served, I think, to raise awareness on the importance of environmental contamination of samples and the prolonged stability of DNA in the environment. So we know that DNA in the environment can be there for long periods of time. So, and that can be a problem for testing. And, you know, it's good to see that we were not the only ones that encountered diagnostic issues with the detection of vaccine products by PCR. So there are all other reports, at least two other reports out there around the same time that described diagnostic challenges associated with this environmental contamination of vaccine products, especially. So this serves us, and this, I think, this should make us realize that for an appropriate interpretation of PCR results, especially for mycoplasma, but I would say for all other pathogens, efforts should be made to minimize the possibility of pre-analytical error. And, you know, this is a term that we use here in the lab. And that is all the procedures that occur before the sample is analyzed in the lab. So including sample, everything that what happens in the outside the lab, right? From sample collection in the farm to handling that sample, to transporting that sample, everything that happens before the sample is tested is extremely important for later, for interpreting the diagnostic results. So for example, what can we do to in order to improve that or to minimize that pre-analytical error, right? To improve the quality of the samples. One thing, easy things that we can do in the farm is determining a clean and dirty area when sampling, as well as cleaning and disinfecting the sampling materials regularly. I think it would be beneficial in most cases and for most pathogens. And all these measures, all these, you know, cleaning measures should be maximized in high-risk scenarios, such as, for example, when we monitor gills for introduction to a naive herd, especially when these gills have been vaccinated prior to sampling at the GDU, for example. These are high-risk scenarios that, you know, can give us a lot of trouble if, you know, diagnostic trouble or diagnostic interpretation issues if it's not, you know, if they are not done correctly. This was first. The second takeaway from this study is this was maybe the most important part of the PhD, is how the lack of a test that would determine bacterial viability for mycoplasma high pneumonia had important implication in this case. So for example, imagine that we had a way to determine that what we were detecting was dead or alive, right? Of the mycoplasma that was detecting on those prostate fluids was dead or alive, that perhaps would have helped us. And don't get me wrong, PCR testing is a great diagnostic tool. It has high sensitivity, high specificity. We use it every day here in the lab, right? It's great. It's great. But the assay is not able to determine the viability of the genetic material that we are detecting. So, you know, differentiating live versus dead bugs. So it might lead to interpretation issues. So in order to overcome this limitation, we have developed a viability PCR assay for mycoplasma, an assay that is able to tell us if the mycoplasma that we are detecting is dead or alive. And we are using this assay in different, we have used this assay and we are still, you know, developing this assay as a diagnostic tool in different scenarios with very promising results. So I'm sure we will learn a lot about mycoplasma in general, and we will solve some of the diagnostic problems with mycoplasma with this new assay.
Very interesting. So in your role as a diagnostician, you're not necessarily using this type of assay yet. It's still in the developmental.
Yes, yes. So we do not have it here set up in the diagnostic lab. This is so it has been developed in the lab already, you know, validated in the lab, in the mycoplasma research lab. And we are using it now in the, you know, in specific scenarios in the field, you know, testing it outside the lab, you see. So, and we are collecting very good data from all those studies. And we hope that sooner rather than later can be added to the workflow of the diagnostic lab for, you know, to try to help us in some of those very particular scenarios. It won't replace the current PCR of Mycoplasma pneumoniae. You know, this, you know, detecting DNA it's good and it served us for the vast majority of what we are looking for, and you know, it's great. It's a great diagnostic tool, but there are certain scenarios in which, you know, and knowing the viability would be very important. And again, at this point is research, but yeah, I hope it we can use it here soon.
Thanks for that further explanation. So to wrap up our discussion here, is there any closing remarks that you would like to make at all?
Well, I just want to take advantage of this opportunity to reinforce the idea that diagnostics in general, the ways in which we detect pathogens and especially the ways in which we interpret laboratory results are fundamental for disease control. So it's my belief, and I think history has proven that without good diagnostics, there is no way to control or treat diseases in animals. Especially, you know, we talk about pigs here. So pigs, of course, but, you know, disease, animal diseases in general. So I think efforts at improving diagnostics and, you know, receiving good diagnostics tests or reports, etc. The veterinarian, it helps the veterinarian a lot in all animal species. And I think diagnostics are very important for the veterinary profession in general. So I would encourage everybody that is listening to try to get the best quality samples and to contact the best quality labs in order to get very good diagnosis for the diseases that they are seeing clinically, because this will help us treat and control those diseases.
Thank you, Albert, for sharing your research on Mycoplasma pneumoniae diagnostics. And thank you to those listening to the University of Minnesota Swine and You podcast. This has been Sarah Sheik-Belke, Swine Extension Educator, along with Albert Kenture, a veterinary pathologist at the Veterinary Diagnostic Lab. To further connect with the University of Minnesota Swine Extension, please visit the swine-specific webpages on the University of Minnesota's website at www.extension.umn.edu/swine. And on those pages, you will find connections to our blog and Facebook page. To learn about research being done by our swine faculty in veterinary medicine, please visit their Swine in Minnesota blog at www.umnswinenews.com.